Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Together, shall we? It's All About Food. It's January 13th, 2014, and here we are for another show, which happens to be about food. Surprise! All right, let's get going here, and I'm real excited because we're going to be speaking with some wonderful people out there who really believe in what I think is so important on this planet today, especially, and that is making veganism easy and tasty. Easy and tasty, because it's right for all the reasons, and why not make it delicious and easy? And all the other troubles just melt away. So I'm going to bring on Matthew Glover and Jane Land. Matthew is the co-founder of Veganuary. And after being vegetarian for 10 years, he watched the video meat industry doesn't want you to see and was shocked to see the cruel realities behind the dairy and egg industries. And he went vegan, and now he wants the whole world to join him. And his solution, just like mine, is making veganism an easy and tasty experience for everyone. And Jane Land is the co-founder of Veganuary, and she was vegetarian for 10 years before she met Matthew, and now she wonders why it took her so long to become a vegan, too. I can understand that myself. Jane thinks that Veganuary is the perfect way for people to try vegan food and learn about the suffering of farmed animals and the impact that meat eating has on people's health and the natural world. Welcome, Matthew and Jane. Are you both with me?
Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Karen.
Okay, great. Now, the wonderful thing about this is you're very far away. You're in York. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, in the UK. So it's about 9 o'clock here.
Great. Yeah, thank you for taking the time. It really inspires me when I know that there are people everywhere who realize the importance of this mission.
Yeah, no, it's great to be on there. And one of the things that we're finding with Veganuary is it's becoming truly global as well. So we're getting people, you know, taking part from all over the world, which is just wonderful.
Okay, we're going to talk about Veganuary in a minute, but I was just intrigued by the simple paragraphs that I read about you. The first thing, Jane, you wonder why it took you so long to become vegan. I've been a vegan for like 26 years, and I was vegetarian for longer. And yeah, there was this period when I was a vegetarian where I just didn't know what was going on. How was it for you?
Yeah, I mean, before I met Matthew, I kind of started reading a little bit more about the dairy industry and the egg industry, and sort of piecing things together. But I didn't know any of the vegans, and I thought. But a lot of omnivores think now that it would be too hard, it'd be too difficult, what would I eat? And then I actually met Matthew on a vegetarian dating site.
Mm-hmm.
And we started going out, and he was obviously a vegan at the time, and I was just a vegetarian. And it didn't take him long to convert me. You know, he said, you know, it is easy, you know, and cook me some meals, show me, you know, how to do things, and most of all, he said that he wouldn't kiss me if I'd been eating cheese, so that was me vegan.
That's funny. Well, you know, there are a lot of people that are vegetarian out there, and I want to say thank you for that. It's a good thing to get started on the path and be mindful. You know, and I remember when I was a vegetarian, now this was a really long time ago, there was no internet and there weren't a lot of materials that were easily accessible to find out what was going on. I basically just didn't want to kill animals, but I really didn't know anywhere near the horror that was involved. And from time to time, some more enlightened person than I would made me feel a little uncomfortable for only being a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And I was confused, and I didn't understand, and now I understand, but it's so hard when we're transitioning from one place to another, and we discover these realities, not to take it personally and feel offended and defensive, and sometimes we crawl back in our hole as a result.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's great to meet vegetarians, and one of the things that's happening with Veganuary is there's a lot of vegetarians taking part, and you know, we're helping them get to that next stage. But You know, I found that it took me until I was 38 years old to go vegan, but I'd never met a vegan in 38 years of life, not in my part of the world. So obviously, as you mentioned in the intro, I watched this video, and I had absolutely no idea, really, about the egg industry. I didn't know about the male chicks being ground up. You know, nobody tells you these things, do they?
Nope. Nope. You don't learn about it on the children's shows on television.
No, exactly. And the dairy industry, you know, you see cows in fields and they look happy, and you don't really sort of make that connection, and you don't think, well, how is it that they're producing this milk? It's almost like they're our friends and they're lovingly giving us this extra milk that they've got. And other than that, you just don't think about it. And then, you know, I saw this video and then I started researching it. And it's like, oh, my God, they need to be pregnant, like, all the time.
Yeah.
And the babies get taken away. And, you know, as soon as I realized that, it was, well, you know, vegetarian's not good enough, really. I've got to be vegan. And I'd never met another vegan. But the good thing is there's plenty of information on the internet. And so, you know, it took a couple of months of doing the research and then gradually weaning myself, you know, off. It wasn't a sudden thing. But, you know, so glad I eventually got there.
Yes, I'm glad you did too, because you're doing great work now and informing so many other people. But I'm a little surprised, because I remember traveling to mostly London in the 90s when I did a lot of work as an engineer, and I traveled a lot to Europe. And I lived in France for a while in the 90s too. But when I was in London a lot in the 90s, early 90s, I think it was, when did mad cow disease start coming out? Maybe that was the late 90s. I remember the pubs around the mad cow disease time had vegan options when people started getting scared about meat, but they actually knew the word vegan. I was really surprised at that, because they seem more aware of it than most of us in the United States.
Mm. Yeah, I guess it depends which part of the UK. London's a lot more progressive, you know.
Yeah.
I grew up in a sort of a northern industrial town. And I think even more than that, it depends what your circle of friends and your contacts, what they're doing. And my background is, you know, I'm a businessman, and I was specifically at the time involved in the building industry. So, you know, I'm hanging around with builders and joiners, electricians, plasterers. You know, they're not vegetarian, they're certainly not vegan. So you just, you know, it just wasn't something that ever was in my life to give me that spark, really. It was only this video that I stumbled upon by mistake, really.
How did you stumble upon it? Or the universe put it in front of you?
Yeah, it was a banner advert. I had become interested in climate change, and so I'd been reading lots of books about that. So I'd started really to be interested in, you know, just the environment movement in general. And more specifically, I'd been reading about a topic called peak oil, which, you know, is to do with, you know, the amount of oil that you've got underground once you reach halfway, once you've used up half of the oil that's underground, then, you know, all sorts of problems happen. So I was on a blog about that, and there was this banner advert, and it just said the video the meat industry doesn't want you to see. And I thought, oh, being vegetarian, you know, that's of interest. But I clicked on it, and that sort of changed everything then. So, and the good thing is, because I was so interested in environmentalism, the vegan thing seemed to tick both boxes, really. It was reducing animal cruelty, but it was also helping to tackle climate change and so many other, you know, environmental problems. So it was like a double win, really.
It's really a triple win a quadruple win. There are just so many benefits to eating plants. It's amazing. And there are no side effects or bad effects. It's all good. It's all beautiful. So you mentioned the environment, and unfortunately, the environmental advocates are really slow to putting out the information about the impact of animal agriculture on the climate and and environmental devastation. And this is so frustrating.
Yeah, we're totally with you. And we contacted Greenpeace in the UK to see if they would support Veganuary. And, you know, the responses that we got from various different people, it's very disappointing that, you know, they just don't, they're a bit frightened of the topic. It's a bit unpalatable maybe for their supporters, which was frustrating. And we've also been in touch with, there's in the UK, Greens for Animal Protection, so it's a division of the Green Party, and you know, they're very supportive, but trying to get the Green Party to back, even just to mention Veganuary, you know, on their social media, you know, they're very reluctant to do so.
Yeah. And they'll all advocate eating less meat, but they won't seem to go as far as saying no meat.
It's so hard to see the truth sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, tell me about Veganuary. When did it Veganuary?
Well, we've never heard that before, actually. That's good.
I got a million of them. I'm here all week.
Okay. Yeah. It started, the idea started in September 2013, and it was just the two of us chatting, and we'd been to the Animal Rights Conference in the United States. Well, I've been three times now, and the last two times with Jane. And so we've been sort of researching, you know, the most effective activism that we can possibly do for animals, and, you know, reading books and just, you know, researching as much as we could. And we're trying to find what sort of our role would be. You know, should we be breaking into factory farms and rescuing animals, or should we be handing leaflets out, or, you know, and we just, you know, and then this idea came up, and it was inspired, we started talking about Movember. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's when guys all over the world grow a mustache for the month of November, and at the same time raise money for prostate cancer research. And we thought, you know, there's millions of people do it, and they raise loads of cash, and it's really raised awareness of men's health issues. We thought, well, what can we do that's got that same sort of vibe, but it's for animals? So, you know, we're singing off the same song sheet, but, you know, we felt the best thing to do for animals is go vegan. So how can we get more people to go vegan? And in which month would be the best? Well, you know, it's got to be January with New Year's resolutions, people have eaten too much at Christmas, you know, it's people more interested in the health, new beginnings. So January seemed like the correct month, so it was Vegan January. And, you know, it sounds a bit contrived, but that's how we came up with Veganuary. So that's really how it began, the thought process. And then it was, we went to approach the agency, the design agency that do a lot of the stuff for my business investments. And we said, look, could we get something ready by early November, get a website? This is from September to November. So it was a real mad rush, but we invested in sort of the design concept and building a website. And we managed to get the site launched by, I think it was the third week in November 2013. And then we had 5 weeks promoting it up until January the 1st. And we got 3,300 people took part. We got some pretty decent media coverage in the UK, not particularly in the States.
Mm-hmm.
It was really great, wasn't it? And we thought, we always treated it as being more of a soft launch, January 2014. And then since then, pretty much we've been rebuilding the site, and since February last year, we did some research. We asked people what they wanted from the site, and what was clear was that a lot of people understand the reasons why to go vegan, but what they may be unsure about was how to go vegan. So, you know, they wanted more practical help, So we built the site and we put hundreds of recipes on there. We put a product directory on there to help people find, you know, substitute meats and vegan cheese and plant milks and all of that. We've got an eating out guide on there. We've got a myth section because, you know, so when people are taking part and people are asking them, where do you get your protein from? Well, we've got the answer to that on the site and so many others. So that's basically it. We've been working on it basically all last year, and then I guess it reaches a crescendo between Christmas and New Year. That's when, you know, when people are thinking about New Year's resolutions. Our site was just going mental, wasn't it?
Mm.
We were getting 120,000 page views per day.
Wow.
On the site, which is incredible.
Well, it's interesting how people need an event or some sort of promise or commitment, like a kick in the butt, to get them to make a change that they wanted to do for a long time. So January is an ideal time. We all know this because it's this new year. Even though the calendar really isn't real, it's something we've created, but we all buy into it, and it's a great time to make promises and pledges to do better for the planet, do better for ourselves. And something I learned a long time ago, I used to be a part of another organization called Earth Save International, which was founded by John Robbins in the late 80s, and I was executive director for a while, and we had a program called the Veg Pledge, and it was a similar thing. People pledge for 60 days to move to one of three kinds of diets. We had a vegan pledge, a vegetarian pledge, and a transition pledge to reduce or eliminate animals in their diet. And what we kept finding out was that, I mean, it was a no-brainer. People just needed to have a kick in the butt, just say, okay, I'm going to do it, sign a piece of paper or sign up or something, and that's the commitment that they needed to keep going. And then, of course, you hope that once they get involved and try the foods, then they're going to feel better, have all this energy, realize some of the food is better than anything they've ever tried, and they're hooked. Right?
Yeah, right. we found that as well, when people were making a pledge, that their friends and family seemed to be a lot more supportive as well, rather than if they just turn around and say, right, I'm going vegan, which can sometimes be a bit shocking for friends and family. By saying you're actually doing a challenge or you're making a pledge, they become much more supportive, and it encouraged people to try it as well.
Yeah, and I think that's why the strapline that we've gone with this year is try vegan this January rather than go vegan this January. I mean, clearly we do want people to go vegan, but we're sort of encouraging them in a sort of a very non-judgmental way, saying, look, just try it for the month, see how you get on. And then by giving them the support and giving them the encouragement, the hope is that, you know, a good proportion of the people that are taking part will stay vegan. So last year we did the survey afterwards, and of the people that did the survey, which is about 750 people, we found that half of them were suggesting that they were going to stay vegan after the month. And of the other half, the bulk of those were saying, yeah, okay, we've enjoyed it. We're not staying vegan, but we're going to reduce the amount of chicken that we eat. We're going to reduce the amount of milk that we consume. So, and the hope is this year, by having more of the practical help than we had last year, that we can get an even better proportion, bigger volume of people taking part, but also a higher conversion rate during the month of people actually sticking with it. So we're already seeing it on the Facebook group, aren't we? There's people already on there, and they're all chatting amongst themselves and giving themselves support. And people are already saying, I'm thinking I'm staying. You know, a lot of them are saying that they have no intention on January the 1st of going vegan. They were just doing it for the month. But quite a few people are already saying, I'm surprised, I feel so good. You know, I feel a lot better in myself.
Losing weight, having more energy.
Yeah. Why would I stop doing this?
Yeah.
You know. So,
That's wonderful. What I like to say, I haven't said it in a while, so I'll say it now, and that is, you don't know how good you can feel until you do it. You just don't know. I had a friend once say, how do you know how I feel? How do you know? And I said, I don't know, but I do know that if you eat this way, you are going to feel better than you ever did. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pleasant side effect, you know, for me. I lost weight. I would have gone vegan on the basis that my health would get worse. I would have still gone vegan. But, you know, it was a pleasant side effect that it actually, you know, I lost weight and I felt a lot better inside. And, you know, even more recently, we're both trying to transition more away from junk food and more to whole foods, plant-based food. And that's what we've been doing in Veganuary, cutting sugar out, cutting salt out, trying to cut as much bread out of our diet and just go back to basics. And you know, you feel it.
Well, for some people, it takes a little bit longer if they have that intention to want to really clean up their diet. But for me, yeah. too, it's all about eliminating pain and suffering. So killing of animals for food, it's not necessary. I don't want a part of it, period. But what a bonus that the healthy, whole, minimally processed plant foods are so good for us.
Yeah, too right. And well, I've been researching, have you heard of Scott Jurek?
Of course, the athlete.
Yeah, the ultramarathon runner. Well, I read his book middle of last year, and I've never really been active my whole life, but I read the book and I was so inspired, and me and Jane went out and ran and walked 2 miles, didn't we? Because we were both worn out. But, you know, I stuck with it since then. I've carried on running. And, you know, well, within about 7 weeks, I was running 16 miles.
Whoa!
Yeah, but then I pulled a muscle. And then we got married, didn't we? And we went on honeymoon and everything. So running took a back seat. But then, you know, I've carried on sort of the back end of last year. And then I met up with a group of vegan runners, local people here, and a couple of them said they were signed up for this ultramarathon, a 69-mile ultramarathon that needs completing within 24 hours. And I thought, oh, what the hell, you know, so I signed up for it, and I've got 20 weeks now to get myself in a position where I can run 69 miles, and it's along Adrian's Wall in the north of England, which is this old, it's the wall that the Romans built to keep the Scots out. And so it's got a lot of history, and it's really hilly. And it's just,
well, I wish you a lot of luck. I think you're crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if anybody can do it, someone fueled on plant food certainly can. We know
exactly that.
Yeah. I want to get back to the go vegan versus try vegan. That's really profound to me. I think we're such, as a species, humans, we've got a lot of issues, a lot of character issues. And when we're presented with evidence that will really make a positive difference for our personal lives, for ourselves, for our family, and then for the community and the whole planet, all life on Earth, we still have to walk on eggshells sometimes when we're feeding this information to people so that we don't offend them or put them on the defensive. We have to be so gentle, and just the word go versus try can make such a difference. It's nutty.
It is, and, you know, we debated whether or not for the month to be a vegetarian month, for example, just so it seems easier for people to try it. But having both being vegan, it just didn't feel right to us.
Because we've used a lot of our own money, and we just thought we just couldn't invest that
yeah.
in something that we didn't really wholeheartedly believe in.
Yeah.
it's got to be vegan. I mean, and if, you know, like you say, if people, you know, some people are still just doing vegetarian, aren't they? Some people we know.
Oh, yeah.
And that's fine, you know, and they'll come to it and they'll say, well, I had this vegan meal and I had, you know, maybe two vegan meals a day and one was vegetarian. That's fine. Okay, great. You're getting there. You know, we can't speak being vegetarians ourselves for so long beforehand. How, you know, it's not for us to start being judgmental now, and that's the ethos of Veganuary is it's such a supportive program. You know, people have said that in the Facebook group, if they said, oh, I've had a slip or I've eaten this by mistake, you know, I'm going to get thrown out of the club. Of course you're not, you know. You know, we'll just offer some advice and help you back on the wagon, so to speak.
Well, in hindsight, when I think about my own journey, it was classic. I gave up red meat, chicken, then I gave up fish and dairy and eggs and went along that continuum. But now I know from health point of view, it's better to give up dairy, number one, first. It's the worst thing we could put in our bodies. And from a environmental point of view, eggs and chicken production and dairy production, they're devastating on the planet and also the most cruel, I think. I mean, it's all horrible, but just horrible things go on with the treatment of chicken and keeping the cows pregnant all the time. The way they inseminate these cows, it's just obscene and pornographic, and I don't know how anybody could do that kind of, I don't want to call it work, do that kind of activity.
Yeah.
It's really, really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm glad you chose vegan, because I think there's, we have sort of a global consciousness. I think we learn individually, but then we also learn as a community. And I believe as a community, we've made that step forward where we understand, not everyone, of course, but we can make the leap from eating animal foods to no animal foods without having to stop along the way and consume dairy and not give that up.
Yeah, there's definitely positive signs. And I quite often think, is it that I'm seeing all these positive signs because I am vegan and, you know, I've got more friends that I'm seeing the stuff on Facebook and all the news pops up and you know, would... You know, but I do feel there is a change, and what we're trying to do with Veganuary is trying to make the word vegan, I guess, a little bit more mainstream. You know, so that vegan becomes more like what vegetarian was sort of 20 years ago. I think we're getting there. I have read people suggesting, you know, that the word needs renaming, but it's a beautiful word. You know, and it just needs branding better. And I take your point about the eggshells. You know, we have to do it ourselves with the campaign. So, but every now and then we do try and put some reality in there. So there's, you know, if you follow our Facebook page, a lot of it is real positive stuff.
I never heard anyone say that the word should be renamed. I'm kind of intrigued by that. I'm very at peace with the word vegan. I've been using it for a long time, but what's wrong with it?
No, I saw one guy on Facebook in one of these groups suggesting he called himself, I think it was an animalist. Was it an animalist? So that when people ask him what you know, rather than word vegan, or why, what is an animalist? And you know, he was explaining that you know, he's against cruelty to animals, and you know, framing it in that respect. But and then I've heard other people saying that we need, you know, the word vegetarian. You know, in the very early days, vegetarians were mostly vegan. We're talking like in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then people started eating dairy and eggs and suggesting that we need to take back the word vegetarian to mean vegan. But I just think that would be so confusing for people compared to where we are. I think we need to just stick with vegan and just make it more popular and make sure that we get more vegan options in restaurants, we get more vegan options on the shelves in supermarkets. And just make it, you know, sell it to people in a lot stronger way than what it has been in the past.
Do we really need do we really need to have an ideal word? It's just a concept, and I don't care what people call it, and I look forward to a day when it's just so common that we don't even need a name for it anymore. It's just the way people are. People would think they would never kill for anything, for clothing or for food. So we have some different words. As vegans, we're shaking up a lot of things, and we're shaking up the definition of foods, which seem to be more serious in some countries than others. But the definition of milk is changing. It's not just the liquid from an animal to feed its child. Different liquids from different plants like soybeans and almonds. You can have nut milk and all different kinds of milk. And the definition behind cheese is going to change. It's not going to be just cultured animal milk product. It's going to be cultured and aged from these other milk, soy and nuts and grain milks. And then the same thing with meat. And I love what's going on with some of the companies here in the United States that you're probably familiar with, like Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods, where it's just genius. So they are going to make meat and cheese, real meat and real cheese, but they're going to do it without the animal. They're making a machine or a different kind of technology that will take the place of what the animal does and make virtually the same products, meat and cheese without the animal. This is exciting. So these words are all going to change their meanings. We have a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, Hampton Creek and Beyond Meat. I mean, these companies could do more for reducing animal suffering than the animal rights movement has, you know, in such a short space of time, you know. And that's really exciting if you can get more companies to embrace that. And I understand that, like Unilever with the lawsuit, they've looked at what Hampton Creek are doing, and now, you know, Unilever's starting to think, oh, maybe we need to start thinking more plant-based with our other product ranges. So it's that ripple effect that comes from these companies.
Yeah, I mean, if Unilever was really smart, they have so much market share across the planet, they could probably wipe Hampton Creek off out of their competition if they moved fast enough. Not that I want them to, but, you know, they have that capability. They just have to be smart.
Yeah.
It's all about economics, unfortunately. I wish that we could all make decisions based on ethics, morality, but we don't.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, making meat and cheese from plants is cheaper.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's just going to get cheaper. Right. So, just a few more minutes. What are your favorite recipes on the Veganuary site?
Oh, that's a tough question.
Or you could tell me what your favorite vegan dishes are.
Yeah, actually, we're not great cooks, are we? We quite often.
Okay, are there some restaurants that you like to go to that make some fun things to eat?
Yeah, we traditionally eat out a lot, don't we? And we've got lots of restaurants that we go to. But, I mean, because we're trying to get more healthy, we're cooking stuff ourselves, aren't we? So we're having a lot of salads at the minute and just mixing that up. What was the thing that we made yesterday? It was stuffed peppers with quinoa in it, and, you know, it had basil in it and mushrooms. That was pretty good for us, wasn't it?
Yeah, it looked impressive.
I know the show's all about food, but we're actually we're more the activists rather than the food guys, really, to be honest.
Okay, but the thing is, people need to know, if they're making this transition, that they're not going to be miss anything. There's not going to be things that they feel like are left out. They're going to be able to have everything that they need and want, and the food's going to be satisfying and delicious.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you an idea on the site that the the recipe that we're getting the most views of is the Really Hungry Burger, which is like this triple-decker burger. It's got mushrooms in it, and it's got like a melted vegan cheese coming off it. The picture looks fantastic. And that's had something like 3,500 page views, just that one recipe.
Wow.
And we've got, you know, there's mac and cheese on there. There's, you know, you name it, different curries.
Anything that anybody, that favourite dishes, whether that was spaghetti bolognese, lasagna, pizza, we've got a vegan version of it all.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to miss out on and just lots of new things to discover.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I'm definitely going to have to check out that, what is it, the Hungry...
Really Hungry Burger.
Really Hungry Burger. Great. That sounds good.
We didn't mention that also. I mentioned that we had 3,300 people that took part last year, but we're over 12,000 now this year. And that's people that are actually signed up on the website. But we've had so much positive press, you know, in the news in the States and also over here. A lot of the national media have covered it. And so we actually think that it's at least double that, people that are actually taking part. But we think there's a lot of people just... they hear about Veganuary, or they take part, they don't necessarily know there's a website, or they've got to sign, you know, or fill the details on a website to take the pledge. So we'll never know for sure. But.
You know, one last thing. I remember a few years ago, The Lancet came out with a report saying that Great Britain would have to reduce their consumption of meat by 30%, I think, in... by 2050 or 2030 or something like that in order to reduce climate change. And I would think there would be a lot of organizations that would want to promote what you're doing just to achieve those goals.
Yeah. Well, let's try and beat the 30%, eh?
Yeah. Let's turn it all around with delicious, healthy, yummy, compassionate, cruelty-free, environmentally friendly food, shall we?
Yeah, we're with you.
Okay, Matthew and Jane, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food.
And, thank you for having us.
Yeah, and remember, I just want to say try vegan, and then go vegan.
Okay. Actually, our campaign message for February is going to be stay vegan from February.
Yeah. So, oh, that's good.
We won't take our foot off the gas after January, that's for sure.
Okay. All the best to you, too. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen.
You.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, let's take a quick break, and I'll be right back to share some news about food. Hey, everybody. I'm back. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. It's the second part of our show here on January 13th, 2015. I think I said 2014 before, did I? Oh, you know how that goes. 2015. I'll get it probably within the year sometime. I like the number 2015. Let's talk about some things in the news. I saw some interesting articles about the Coca-Cola company cutting jobs. Now, that's unfortunate for those who have jobs that are going to be losing them because it's never fun to lose a job. Most of us need to work, and it can be really a scary thing. Especially in this kind of climate, although they say unemployment is going down, but it's still really challenging, especially for people who've been in a position for a really long time to get out in this new kind of job climate and find employment. Things have really changed a lot in the last 10 years, and it can be really difficult. But on the good side, there are reasons why Coca-Cola is cutting jobs. I don't think they're going to admit it, but the sale of soda, the sale of carbonated beverages is down, not just with Coke, but also with Pepsi. And I want to say yay to that. I want to believe that people are getting a little bit smarter. And when we talk about the standard American diet and we talk about the animal foods that are not only cruel to produce, but unhealthy for us and devastating on the environment. The other side of that standard American diet has the highly processed foods. And for people that really want to get healthy and improve their diet, some of the simplest first steps that they can do is eliminate soda. Eliminate those highly sugary beverages. And we're seeing it happen. This is really exciting. What are all the things that are wrong with Coca-Cola? And when I say Coca-Cola, I also mean Pepsi, because they're like twins. To start with, when we consume Coca-Cola, it leaves a very bad acidic environment in our bodies. It's an atmosphere that promotes illness, that promotes disease. That's not a good thing. The other bad thing, and you know this, is the sugar. And whether it's sugar, high fructose corn syrup, wherever you're going to get that sweetener, it's empty calories, and it causes a lot of inflammation. We're learning more and more about how addictive sugar and other sweeteners are. This is not a good thing. And the other side of that is, okay, well, if you want to have the carbonated beverage, you think, well, maybe I'll have the artificial sweeteners, and those are even worse. They do all kinds of tricks to our brains. They stimulate our appetite. So for those unfortunate people who think they're doing a good thing by reducing the number of calories in their drinking diet soda, maybe they don't want to gain weight, or maybe they want to lose weight. Those artificial sweeteners are tricking our brains and making us want to eat, and it makes it that much harder to make your objectives, meet your goal. The other thing is there tends to be some caffeine in those sodas, Coke and Pepsi, and there's a lot of mixed information out there about caffeine. We see like studies all the time. Every other day, it seems, some say caffeine's good, some say caffeine's bad. I personally don't think we should be getting a lot of it, maybe a little, but or none at all, but not too much. And I would rather, if I'm going to have caffeine, I would rather get it in chocolate, dark chocolate, or in teas like black tea or green tea, where we're getting so many other health benefits. There's a lot of things in there's a lot of things in Coke that really aren't healthy for us. So we don't need, if you think you need caffeine, you don't need to be getting it from a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi. But there are two other things that I think are really serious about drinking carbonated beverages like Coke and Pepsi. And number one is when our bodies are thirsty, we need water. When our bodies are thirsty, we need water. Or we need water either just by drinking water or by eating foods like very juicy fruits or very juicy vegetables that are filled with water in them. We can't live without water. Water is so important. And people that feel fatigued or have headaches or have all kinds of problems, one of the reasons might be because they're dehydrated. Water is very important. And getting it from Coke or Pepsi is really not a good way to hydrate your body. The last thing is most carbonated beverages today, like Coke and Pepsi, come in plastic bottles. And we keep finding more and more issues with plastic. And it's scary. And it's heartbreaking. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about just that. But before I talk about all the nightmares coming out in the research about plastic, I want to give some solutions. So when I'm moving around, and I move around a lot, I don't have a car. I live in New York City. I take the subway. I travel with water in glass bottles. Now, it's a little heavy. But there are some wonderful glass bottles today that have like a rubber carrying case or packaging around it, so it makes it really hard to break them. And I've just gotten into the habit of doing that. You could also carry water in stainless steel containers. They're kind of pricey. But those are really the options that are available. Of course, occasionally if I'm really thirsty and there's no other water except in a plastic bottle, I'll drink it. But I don't even know if I want to do that anymore. The more I read about what's in plastic, and it just gets scarier and scarier. So there's a new study just came out in... have you been to the PNAS website? It's the Proceedings of... Here we go. It is the... I can't stand when there's always acronyms and then you never know what the real name is. Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America, PNAS. They have wonderful information, and they've got incredible amount of studies going on all the time. When I went over to look at this particular study today, I read the contents and found a few more things that I wanted to talk about. But basically, there was a recent study on biphenyl A, BPA. We all know how bad that is and how it's used in the liner cans of soups and other canned foods. It's in like everything. It's coats, sales receipts, and it's in tippy cups and all kinds of things. And now it's being banned, and companies are taking it out. But the things that they're using instead may be just as harmful or worse. And this particular study compared biphenyl or bisphenyl. You say bisphenyl, I say biphenyl. BPA, and they compared it with BPS, bisphenyl S. So there's bisphenyl A and bisphenyl S. And it's a common analog used in BPA-free products. And what they discovered, now I have to make a disclaimer because the studies were done on mice, and I'm not happy when I see studies done on animals. But when we learn things... Oh, no, I'm sorry. The study was done on zebrafish larvae. It wasn't done on mice. I'm confusing. It was another study that I was just looking at. Bottom line is these studies were not done on humans, but the human epidemiological results, while they're still emerging, are showing an association with the results that they found on the zebrafish. The bottom line is that this bisphenyl S is even more powerful on causing wreaking havoc. So there was a 180% increase in neuronal birth issues with the hypothalamus and in the zebrafish with BPA, and it was 240% increase with BPS. So the BPS, which we thought could be used instead of BPA and is in a lot of plastics today, is actually worse than BPA. And this is scary. They were connecting the dots and saying that some of the issues like behavioral disturbances in children, hyperactivity, all kinds of things can come out of the problems related to these plastics. And in some cases, they've seen a greater impact on the males versus the females. And we see some of those issues when it comes to autism, for example. There are more cases in boys than in girls. So the thing is, we really need to get the plastic out of our life and fast. But here's another problem, and I really don't know what the solution is, but all of our clothing, for example, that's made from plastic materials like fleece. You know, we were all so happy when people were recycling Coke bottles and making warm fleece jackets out of it. It just seems so economically friendly, all this great recycling. Well, when we wash things like fleece, these microfibers, come off in the laundry water and go into the water and end up in the ocean, and we're seeing them in all kinds of sea life today and wreaking all kinds of havoc. The plastic that we have created is everywhere. So to start with, we can be using less and none at all, and then we have to figure out how to clean up our mess, the plastic that we've put out there into the environment. I want to believe that we can do it, and when put to the test, humans can be pretty damn creative. But in the meanwhile, I think we have a lot of work to do, and I personally use glass as much as I can. As I mentioned before, when I bring food home from the supermarket, I move everything into glass containers. I refrigerate a lot of it. And for me, it's glass and stainless for the most part, and eliminating much of the plastic in my life. I wish you the same. There were some other interesting articles while I was visiting the PNAS website. That's the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America. Whew, that's a mouthful. And it has to do, a new article says, the commonly used antimicrobial additive triclosan is a liver tumor promoter. Yay! Now, this isn't something necessarily that we eat, but it is related to food in that we see these antimicrobials a lot in cleaning products and in sponges. Something that drove me crazy for a long time is trying to find a sponge that doesn't have these antimicrobial agents. Have you ever experienced that? Most supermarkets, you can't find them. And whenever I do see just plain old sponges, I usually buy out the store because these antimicrobial agents really are dangerous. And this is just one example in the PNAS proceedings where they found that this additive causes liver tumors. Not something that we want, is it? Now, before I leave you, I wanted to talk about some happier notes, quasi-happy notes. A few months ago, I started talking about some things that I'm grateful for, and that leads us into the arts and entertainment portion of this program. Did you know we had an arts and entertainment portion? Well, last week I played a song, so I guess that was an entertainment portion, and maybe all this conversation about food is entertaining. Maybe. I was recently invited to a night at the opera. I had some friends who had some wonderful tickets at the Met, and I was invited to see Aida. And I love the opera. I normally can't afford to go. The prices are crazy expensive, but primarily it's because there are so many people involved in these productions, and this production of Aida that I just went to, it was mammoth. There were so many people on stage. It was quite a spectacle. And, of course, there's wonderful musicians in the pit. And just to create all the costumes and the sets, tremendously expensive. So I can understand the cost of the tickets, but I still couldn't afford it. And I was really glad that I was invited to go. But there were a few things that I was so conflicted with because, number one, the story of Aida is about this conflict between Ethiopia and Egypt. And although this story is fictitious and it took place a long time ago, you realize that these conflicts are still going on today all over the world. And it's just frustrating that we cannot solve these conflicts. But the thing that I was a little nervous about was I knew that the production of Aida was a big spectacle, and I had read about different productions, and while I was sitting there in the audience, I kept thinking, oh no, I hope they're not going to bring out live elephants and other animals, because that's what I've read happens in some of these productions. Fortunately, there were no elephants and there were no camels in this production, but there were two horses, and one of them was really putting up a fuss. I don't think he was too happy to have big feathers on his head and be standing there on the stage in front of so many people, but that's what we do. And where everyone was delighted, I was kind of cringing in my seat and I was really sorry to see that. Anyway, I think we're out of time, and I had a few more things that I wanted to talk about, but I'm going to have to bring them up next time. Shall we do that? Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food. I'm Karen Hartglass. You can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. We have some exciting projects coming up very soon. We've got a new video series that I will tell you more about next week. In the meantime, have a delicious week.